Welcome everybody to Voices of Women. I'm here today with a friend of mine, Karen Popoff. I've known Karen since 1994 and we took a training together. We're in a spiritual training called Training in Power, in which we do a lot of meditation work, a lot of healing work. And so we're in healing groups together and we do a lot of world healing too, which what better time for us to be doing this. So Karen, why don't you share a little bit about yourself, what you do in the world. And Ross, so we're going to talk about how your life is going during this time of this pandemic.
Certainly. Thank you for having me. This is fun. So my professional title is the Transformationalist. I specialize in working with people, helping them through transformation. And so this time is kind of like a global transformation. I train people, I teach people, and I also do one-on-one sessions with people. On another side of my business, I coordinate a conference, which you have attended. I've been doing that for about 25 years. And then I also do some part-time work as a store trainer for a major retailer in the area. So I'm pretty busy. Plus I have two kids. They're not little anymore, but they're pretty active and still I'm pretty active in their lives. That's a little bit of my background.
Well, that's great. And quite a diversity there. And so how much are you busy now during this time? So many people are working at home and some people aren't able to work or do what, you know, they can't see clients or whatever their work is, they're not able to do at this time. How are you faring with that?
Definitely my business has dropped off, and I'm not working at any of my outside activities at all. As the transformationalist, I'm used to working with people from all over the world. I'm used to working remotely with them. But what I find right now is people are too in survival to even reach out. I've had one client in the past month. So it's just a really difficult time. I don't think people are yet ready to have that interaction and talk through things. It's coming.
Yeah, that's interesting because you would think it would be so needed. I remember after 9/11, Conference Women of Wisdom. So we have that in common of organizing conferences. But we just thought, oh, everybody will want to be together, you know, want to be in community. And it was the reverse, that people cocooned and they stayed home. And it made for a couple hard years for our organization because of that. And so you would think people would be looking for places where they can get help. And you're right, they're in survival and they're just dealing with the day-to-day, just like you're dealing with the day-to-day and I am too. And a couple things I want to talk to you about. One, you have a family. Are you kids? You have two kids. They're teenagers, correct?
Yeah. Well, actually, one's a teenager. She just turned 17 a few months ago. And my son will be turning 21 on the 16th. So they're 3.5 years apart in age.
Right. So are they both at home with you?
McKenna is. She's in her 12th year of school. And so school is all stopped, which has been very stressful. Thankfully, her grades are very high. She's got a 95% average, so there isn't any concern about her graduating, but the routine is something that she thrives on, and she's not having that same routine right now. Noah is at school, not near here. Well, it's near here, you would know it. It's in Abbotsford. He's studying to become a helicopter pilot.
Oh, wow.
And about a month off from finishing his training and everything got shut down. So he's just waiting for school to resume. He's by himself in a little apartment in Abbotsford, which is really hard on me. We're all making it. He's fine. You know, it's just, you want your babies close and he's on his own. He's supposed to be on his own.
Is he staying home alone?
Yeah, he is. Well, he's an introvert to begin with. So he and I are very similar, very much introverted. Staying at home isn't a hard task for us. Whereas, my friend Bryn, who also shares a home with us and her partner and McKenna, they're all extroverts. And so they're all clawing. They want to be out there with their friends and having little get-togethers. And I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, well, it is a change for all of us to deal with. I mean, I'm always at home, and luckily my husband, Chris, he's been retired for 4 years, so I'm used to him being at home, which is some people, you know, that their partners are at home working, and that's new to deal with. I have a neighbor who has two young kids, 5 and 7, and her husband is home working, and I think I talked to her Friday. She's about ready to tear her hair out. And she was talking on the, to get alone time, she was on the phone in the car.
That's tough.
Yeah, especially young kids. And they aren't used to, they're active. The 7-year-old loves soccer and, you know, having to just his little yard. Their father created a little ninja course. It's so fun to watch them. Created a webbing that went between two trees with loop handles they can swing across and climb a ladder to get up there, and
perfect,
you know, and it was just, it's so fun to watch them, and he times them, and you know, it's like a better way to, you know, keep the kids active. And they are homeschooling, and of course here kids are at school online, but yeah, that's totally new for parents.
Well, we're you may not know this, or you may, my kids both homeschooled until they were, well, McKenna's never been in a conventional school except for a little bit in grade 7 and now grade 12. Mm. And she decided to go to conventional school because she wanted to have the teacher support in a different way. She was homeschooled, and then we went into a self-directed learning program where there were teachers, but it was very much student-driven, and she wanted to experience the real deal. And so, yes, they've got online training. We haven't gotten the video conferencing yet for her training. And she's like, Mom, I didn't want to do homeschooling. I'm tired of doing homeschooling. I really want the interaction. I want to be with my teachers. Yeah. So I'm not pushing her right now. Her grades are great, and apparently they're not supposed to be penalized if their grades were to drop in this term. But it's really hard. It is her grade 12 year. She's graduating, and she wants to experience that. She's, you know, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. I mean, you know, don't have the proms, you don't have the graduation ceremonies, you don't have all that excitement in your last quarter of school that the, you know, seniors go through. So they, I'm sure they're feeling missing out on something very special.
Yeah, hopefully they'll move the dates. Currently, the graduation hasn't been canceled. They're waiting to see what happens, what's next.
Yeah.
Everything is shut down until May for sure, but we don't know. Maybe we'll be allowed to start back. I don't know. I'm not thinking so, but you never know.
Yeah. Yeah, they've closed the schools here for the whole season through June. So I don't know what they're going to do here. And I personally don't see us too much changing. I can see it going to May, June. It all depends. And it, even if the government says, okay, people can go back to work, I live with someone who has immune suppression, and that doesn't mean we can go out there.
That's right.
It doesn't mean that this virus is gone. It's, you know, it's still out there. And so we have to be ultra careful. So let's talk about, how has your life changed during this, personally, during this time?
Well, yeah, so I've been off work at the retail store for about 2.5 weeks now. We were working, but with the store closed for the first 2 weeks from the middle of March. And what that did was kind of give us a sense of illusion that everything was normal, which it wasn't. So at the end of March, everything shut down. We're shut down for 4 weeks. And I found the first few days to the first week really disorienting. I was aware of how much of my time I lived in a distracted state, running errands, going and doing things that I had thought were essential, when you really boil it down, were not. And then how do you fill all these hours with not only the, how do you fill them with things to do? You can always find things to do, but how do you deal with the emotions that present that we've been kind of suppressing through our distractions? And that was the first week, was like, holy moly, okay, I better get on this. I need to find a way to regulate, because I felt like I was unanchored somehow, and everything was moving, and I didn't know where I fit So I've established kind of a priority for myself. I don't have a schedule per se, but I make sure that I accomplish one thing every day, whether it's like yesterday I cleaned the barbecue. I make sure to get out for a walk every day. I do yoga every day already and just have continued with that. Now I'm trying to build in other things like sitting down and reading, doing writing, going and taking a sauna. You know, we're very fortunate we have an infrared sauna. And trying to build in on that so that at the end of this, I don't feel like, oh, well, what did I do? What did I accomplish?
Exactly. I'm sure we all have that fear. And then that brings up, yeah, it was very, just an overwhelm of emotions going through it the first couple of weeks and feeling the collective fear and grief. I think the grief was so, so present for everybody that I think that was it made it difficult. And I kind of settled down after the first couple of weeks, and I felt myself grounded and centered. And interesting, we have a system in place, or our structure. So a structure is good. Well, it's just a little more relaxed, and now we don't get up in the morning as early, and I go downstairs, get tea, I go back to bed and read, and then I get up, have breakfast around noon, and then I do my one thing a day. I've done that too. And at first that was hard, but then I just would tell myself, I will feel good about myself if I've accomplished one thing, even if it was making cookies or something, but I did one thing. And then it's dinner time, and it's been fun cooking and planning things, and then it's movie time and watching Netflix in the evening. And I'm frankly getting a little bored with that a little bit. So somehow it'd be good to, change that routine. I am getting up earlier, and I'm not reading in bed in the morning. I always read at night usually, but that had sort of shifted. So I've stopped the reading in the morning. And then I found I am up early, and I'm finding in the afternoon, wow, it's a little long day. It's only 4 o'clock. Yeah, so actually I started these video calls with my Voices of Women show. It usually is a radio show on Blog Talk Radio. And I thought, wow, there's so much Zoom going on. I'm going to experiment. And so this week I'm talking to one person a day, and it'll be up on my YouTube channel. And you can look for Chris Stainis. And it'll be, people can view it there. And I'm talking to women. I usually interview authors, people who have expertise in a subject. And I read their book, and I interview them. And it just came to me a couple of weeks ago when I was listening to a webinar. And I just, what do we want to do going forward? And I realized, it would be great to just talk to my friends, people I know, what are they doing to deal with this that's going on for them, and how they see their life changing, and what they see going forward with our culture, with our society. And so let's go there. We have already talked about what you're doing in your life, but where do you see this going in your life in the next few months, but even in a long term, how do you see this impacting our culture and some changes that might be brought about by this?
Well, you brought up grief, and I agree. Grief has been a real predominant feature that I've seen over top of everybody. It's not individual or anything. The societal grief is huge. And that's because we're moving out of a time that's familiar, and we're moving into something we don't know. There's a death happening. Mm-hmm. And that death and that grief brings up disappointment. It brings up anxiety. It brings up all kinds of things for people. But the really prominent thing that I'm seeing is the creative spark. And so I feel that we're going to really evolve. Typically, evolution has happened through strife. We've had war that made evolution happen for humanity repeatedly. And this time, it's a war to stay alive, not to go out and conquer. Wow. And I think that's a really interesting shift as well. So it's an internal thing that I think everybody needs to go internal and really have a look inside of where this is a reflection. This is a macrocosm of something going on in each of them. And I know for myself, it's been a huge, huge awareness of so many patterns and so many behaviors that this pandemic has given me the opportunity to see that just don't serve me, that just really were remnants of something I'm not anymore. And I see that societally. I think more and more we're starting to view people shredding and shedding all that's not them. And so I don't know who will be. I don't think that's visible yet. Right now, the collective is in the anger stage. Yeah. They're angry. They've got all the conspiracy theories going on because they want to maintain control. They want to believe they have control. So what comes next is like, oh, okay, well, now what? And I think we're just starting that tipping point. Now what? How will we be? Who will we be? It looks to me a little bit like, did you ever see that movie WALL-E?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, you know how they were all floating around doing their computers and stuff? Well, maybe it was a pandemic that put them there. Like, we assumed the story meant certain things because it was within our consciousness that we were all becoming more and more influenced by being on media. We didn't need to go out or anything. And now we can't go out. And so we're looking at media differently, and how do we become inclusive, and how do we create community through something that we were judging before? So that kind of floats through my mind as well. Where are we going to go with all this? How will it look?
Yeah, that's true. And I've been aware of, because I'm in Zoom calls with friends, or we have a happy hour Zoom call and some very, you know, fun things like that, that I'm probably getting more of doing things that I'm connecting more with friends than I did with picking up the phone and, hey, let's get together, which maybe is once a month or once every 3 months. I mean, sometimes some people are so busy, it's like you email like, hey, let's get together, have lunch. Like, oh, I'm free in 2 months from now. Let's check our schedule, you know. Whereas now everybody's free. And, you know, I'm doing weekly calls with some friends that is, you know, unprecedented. We just, you know, we don't do this.
Well, that's us too. I mean, Kara lives on her own. She's a friend of ours. And so we're having dinner with her two or three times a week where we meet up on Zoom. We coordinate what we're going to have for dinner. We had Mexican one night. We had, I don't know, something the same another night. And we've played Cards Against Humanity virtually, which has been an interesting thing. And I agree with you. The Zoom thing where we have to reach out and see people is changing the way we interact. Usually it's through this thing. It's texts. I don't even hear a voice most of the time anymore. My mom and I talk by phone, but everybody else, it's a text. It's like a 3-second interaction. Now we're doing more interacting. I like it.
Yeah, I know. The text thing, it becomes so impersonal. I'm doing more texting than I've in the past couple of years, but I was more into emails than texting. And again, that's also, there's a distance there between people when you're, yeah, you know, texting or emailing, and that, you know, that has its negative consequences too in our society. And now there's this flip. And so, yes, there may be more reaching out to actually be with people, or more continuing the Zoom calls, or showing the need for connecting with people, I think is one of the really important things that's coming out of this, that we know we need to, we're in it, you know, you hear it all over. We're in this together, you know, because we are all going through this, which is pretty amazing. Because usually we're here safe in the U.S. and you're in Canada, and there's some war going on the other side of the world, and we go, oh, isn't that awful? But here we sit, nice and safe.
Yes.
And here we are all experiencing this around the world, and some countries more than others. And interestingly, the highest number of COVID-19 cases are in the U.S. and, you know, for all sorts of reasons. But, you know, here we have, you know, great medical places to go to and look what's happening.
Well, you've also got a bigger population, and there are many, many factors involved. In Canada, we've got quite a low rate, mm-hmm, in relationship to the world, but it's still 1% are dying. It's, you know, and we've got an amazing medical system that we can go to at any time without repercussion of whether or not we've got a plan or whatever.
Right.
And I think because we're doing this, social distancing, I don't really like that. Physical distancing is probably a better term. I think we're getting closer in a social way. Because we're doing the physical distancing, we have been able to affect how quickly it spreads. But then on the other side of it, I wonder, well, what happens when we go back to work? What will happen then? Will we see an upsurge in cases again? Maybe we've had cases. We're not testing everybody. I got really, really sick after the conference, and I swear I had all the symptoms. I'm 100% confident I had the virus. And yet we don't have the testing available yet to find out, do I have the antibodies?
Right. Same here. And I was sick too. I had a sore throat for a month. I didn't have a fever. I mean, I actually did contact my doctor because I had a cough. I had a sore throat. I had, you know, different things. And I wondered, I was concerned because, you know, with my husband being immune suppressed, but he's not gotten sick. So I just have to assume, okay, it wasn't it, or he would have, you know, it's so contagious, he would have gotten sick.
But you don't know, like in our house, I got sick, McKenna got sick. They wouldn't test me. I did call. I didn't fit the category of people they would test. Mm-hmm. McKenna got sick. Bren and her partner, Mare, had mild sort of a scratchy throat one day, a little headache, and that's all. So that's the thing. No one knows for sure who's had it, because we're all presenting with such different symptoms. They're not all the same.
Yeah, it makes it very interesting and difficult. And we just have to assume, we still just have to take care of ourselves.
That's right. And I think that's key.
You can't assume that you don't have it because you don't have any symptoms and that you won't pass it on to other people.
That's right. And I think that taking care of ourselves is essential. Like my physician also studies nutrition and all that. And her big thing was, make sure you're taking vitamin C, make sure you're taking vitamin A, quercetin, D. These things will support your immune system. Then it can actually fight off the virus easier or deal with the virus easier if you do get it. And going outside, you know, I think about when I was a kid, my mom's therapy and my grandmother's, whenever us kids were sick, we had to go outside. We didn't have to play, could sit under a tree, but we needed to have fresh air. We needed to have some sunshine. And I think that's essential as well. You want vitamin D, you want to not just be breathing germ-filled in-house air all day. So, you know, I think that's the thing I'm trying to maintain for myself, is watch my nutrition. It's so easy to grab the junk food, but that's not making me feel good. So what am I going to do differently and make sure I eat better?
Right. Well, I'm fine. I'm eating really well, but I'm fine because we don't have it in the house. I'm walking through the kitchen like, what's there something that I can munch on? Oh, we don't have any ice cream. So it's like, you know, I'm kind of craving the chips, and it's not in the house. So we're eating pretty well, but I'm still finding that. And I'm sure it's, I mean, they talk about that. What am I really craving? You know,
exactly.
The bad food, but sometimes you just want to have it. I mean, I love ice cream. So, you know,
absolutely. Yeah. And McKenna's been learning to bake some of the gluten-free stuff that I've developed. So, you know, we get to have some yummy things in the house, but I can't go and eat it all the time. I don't do well eating sugar to begin with. So just because I can't go out and be in the world all the time doesn't mean I should be consuming all the sugar that's in front of me.
Yeah. And I found, because I had the flu right after New Year's, and I found the sugar over the holidays, I think, had really impacted me. I could really feel that. And so I'm hardly having any sugar right now. And I also know I could feel it when I had my sore throat, like waking up every morning with a sore throat. You know, I know that gets impacted with vitamin C. But I want to go back to something you mentioned, because it's an area I wanted to talk about. You were talking about, because I know you had a Facebook post on this, of the conspiracy theories. And what do you say to people? Someone, you know, contacts you and go, oh my God, this is happening because someone's, you know, all the conspiracy things.
So usually
even hearing that Bill Gates created the virus so he could make a vaccine.
I know, come on. First of all, I remember that the person or people are afraid. And I don't always know these people. So I've got quite a large group of people I became connected through work and conferences I've attended and stuff. And so I don't always know the people well. This has been illuminating how easily some of those people go sliding off. So I have stepped in a couple of times and made a comment, you know, the one that blames the Chinese for starting it as a way to make money, I think is xenophobic. I think it's a very racist and inaccurate comment. And so I made a comment saying, this appears very xenophobic. Is that your intention here? And I got attacked, and attacked by the person who had the post, attacked by all their followers. So I blocked them because they weren't close to me. Then I've seen friends making conspiracy theory posts, and I've just come in and said, you know, I think we need to look at the facts. We need to look at the evidence, and there is way more evidence of XYZ than there is of what you're pointing to. You've got tiny bits of facts to support a whole lot of theory. I've got lots of facts to support lots of facts. So that slows them down sometimes, sometimes it doesn't. And then I have to decide who I want to align with. And sometimes it's not an easy decision, because that means I have to say goodbye. It's not a real friendship to me if we can't be in a world where we are reaching for the best and reaching for the truth. I'm afraid to be in that world where I have to make up stories to get by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's good advice. And yeah, it's important to know who we align ourselves with. And, you know, are you coming from love or are you coming from fear? Because sometimes I look at animals and like cats, or when I had a dog before, it was very obvious it was love or fear.
Yeah.
And if I would be in an argument with my husband, our dog would always disappear. Well, first he'd try to get our attention. And it was one of those arguments, we didn't get our attention. One time we had to go find, it was hiding under a piece of furniture. It's like they know love and they know fear, and they choose, they go out, they go away where the fear is.
Yeah, and the same happens with children growing up. They play out all the emotions. And so you got to learn really quickly how you're going to manage your energy, or you're going to have your kids going crazy. And even as teenagers or young adults, it's the same. They're still super sensitive empaths, and they're going to play out what we're bringing up. So if I'm not going to come out from a love-filled, let's be open about this perspective, I'm bringing my kids into a swirl of energy that they don't need to play in.
So you bring it up that it's really about facts and looking at the sources of, you know, where you, I think we can resonate or feel what feels truthful versus what is just jargon or people making things up or attacking or whatever it is, and to really discern where you're getting your information from and who you're listening to.
And that's a key piece. And they're not always, you know, hell, some of the information we're hearing, even from dignitaries, isn't factual.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that, right?
Right.
We can feel the truth. You're right. It resonates. It has a ring of love tone to it. So if you don't have that, it's okay to question, but to automatically swipe with one fell swoop and say everybody's lying is wrong. We want to make sure we're being very circumspect on accusations and judgments, and be careful, because the next person that might be accused is you. And I'm I want to know, so I do dive in and take a look. Even with that one post, I went and took a look to see if the facts were substantiated, and they weren't. So I came back with facts because I felt that maybe this person hadn't researched it. They just posted it from somebody else. But then I found out that was just a, there wasn't a desire to know more. They felt like everybody was deceiving them on all levels, and they were the ones that knew best. And that's always a dangerous position to be in. We, none of us knows best.
Right. Yeah. Well, we're in this unknown territory now. And I think that's probably a difficulty of this, not knowing how long we're going to be living like this, when, and for some people, it's really difficult for, you know, with their financial, you know, and how, you know, the survival and the financial. I'm fortunate, we're retired, so our income is not affected as much as some other people's.
And yeah, Canada has done a really good job at trying to mitigate some of that anxiety and fear for our residents. There was instant response where they have established an emergency benefit that people could apply for. We had 6 million people apply for it, which gives them $2,000 a month for 4 months while this is happening. The EI benefits, where normally you have a 2-week waiting period, they suspended that so that people could immediately apply and get their benefits. There have been many other resources being provided for the business community to keep people working. The government will pay 75% of the income of that person so that people aren't being laid off. So there's been this amazing response here, and I know that that's part of the reason I'm noticing a general calmness even within the community of people who would be panicking, because they're being looked after, their basic needs are being looked after, and that means that the government can then do the work that they need, the health community can do the work that they need to get us to the next stage. What that looks like, I don't know, but I am really impressed.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's coming through. I know here there's things are supposed to come through, but you hear problems. So, you know, people applying for unemployment, they can't even call, you know, can't reach the office. They can't, you know, or the business loans or, you know, all this, I don't know, I guess you call it red tape or whatever it is. And the $1,200 per person checks are going to be coming soon, but that's not going to last very long for people. And I know that they'll be doing more after that, but I mean, they pretty much will have to, but we'll see. Since
it's been rolling out really quite well here. I was super impressed because I'm most self-employed. I fell into the category that could use the benefit, the emergency benefit. And the application process was like 3 clicks. I had to answer 3 questions, and I had received the money 2 days later.
Oh, wow.
So that has been a pretty common response in the community. People are getting looked after. Yeah, it's not going to cover everything, but man, it's covering food and it's covering the basic essentials. I don't have a mortgage to pay. I have rent to pay. So it's covered and I don't have to worry about that. And that makes me less stressed than I can just relax and not push to do things that are going to be dangerous for others.
Yes. Yes. Well, you're fortunate, and we hopefully in the U.S. things will start playing out. I don't know the whole story of, I just, you know, you hear the problems. You don't always hear people that are, you know, coming through the line. What last words of advice would you give to people during this time, this uncertain time that people are going through? What words of advice that you could help people in dealing with this?
I think that, first of all, me advising people when they're in trauma like this is maybe a little bit self-important. I think we all have to really deeply take a look at what will get us individually through this time, coming out with an awareness of who we are. I want to like myself at the end of this. I want to know that I've done what I can to help others, or what I can to even help my family and myself. People need to be less critical of themselves and others and just really embrace the time. Like, okay, you can't go out, so you wanted a vacation. I know this isn't a vacation. It's not on the beach and you're not doing the things you normally do, but how can you embrace this time and use it as a time for becoming well?
In all ways.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about the etheric bodies of mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual. So, you know, to become well and look at all areas in our lives.
Yeah. And enjoy it. Okay. That was something I came to about a week ago. It's like, okay, I'm here. So I've got two choices. I can continue to be disoriented and having a struggle and being upset about this, or I can find the silver and gold linings. I can look at it in a different perspective, because at the end of the day, how my experience is all up to me. Mm-hmm. There is no one else who can change my experience for me. And so I've chosen to take each step each day with how I'm feeling that day, and how can I make my day a better day? What is it that I need to modify in my perspective today to feel at ease? And whatever else is going on that's upsetting to me, the biggest mantra I have in my head is, it's none of my business. Because ultimately, it's not. So I need to just stick with me. What can I do for me today? And be satisfied at the end of the day that I've accomplished that.
Well, and there's that saying too, if you're taking care of yourself, you're then able to help other people too.
Exactly.
Well, it was great talking with you today. And thank you for you do have words of wisdom. I think one of the things that it's important to do is to stay grounded and centered, which you're doing quite well, and being true to ourselves of what's important for us right now, you know, which yeah. are the people close to us, our families, our animals, taking care of our physicality and our emotions. It's a very emotional time.
It is. And being okay with that, you know, just being okay with it. When my children were really little and they were expressing their emotions, I didn't get angry at them for expressing their emotions. I gave them space to. And so we need to give ourselves that space and just really see what kind of a butterfly we're going to be at the end of this cocooning, because it's going to be pretty awesome, I think.
Yes, well, I look forward to discovering what that is in the future. You know, we can create our future. So it's really up to us that when we come out of this, what is our life going to be like?
Yes, exactly. I appreciate the time to really reflect with you on this. It's been wonderful.
Yes, well, thank you, and stay well.
Yes, you also. Lots of love to you and Chris.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks. Have a good day.